Welcome to the Survival Prepper Show, where being labeled a crazy prepper is a badge of honor. Learn about disaster preparedness, survival, and get ready for whatever challenges might come your way. This is not your typical prepping podcast, and they won't be silenced by the censors. Here are your hosts, Duff and Dale.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to the show tonight. Hey, it actually flipped to the right screen. I'm shocked.
Perfect.
Welcome to the show tonight. Hey, you're talking during the intro. Now you're muted, I think, LP.
No, I'm good. You can hear me, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. At any rate, hey there, everyone. Welcome to the show. Tonight, we've got a special guest on with us, local prepper, which most of you probably know. He's been on my channel, the Survivalist Prepper channel, once or twice, and we've been trying to get him on here for a while, and now we got him. So first off, for those few that don't know who you are, let them know what you're all about, what you do, and any shameless plugs, anything like that.
Okay. I'm the local prepper, and you can find me at localprepper.net, and I talk about prepper stuff.
you're in the right place. Well, I don't know. We tend to talk about a whole lot of stuff and that, is around the edges of prepping, but yeah.
Well, there's always the giraffe. There's Liberated Lady. Somebody just asked me about my giraffe.
Yeah, and I think you explained that last time too, and I don't remember what you said. So I suppose before we might as well get that out of the way right now.
It was just a Christmas gift for the girlfriend. It's a family of artists, and the her brother got it for her, and it drove it all the way from Virginia Beach all the way up the Eastern Shore, and like on the top of his car. It's there in the background. It's so tall you can't see it. Wait, it's over there.
Yeah,
its head.
Hey, so what are you up to, Brian? Still same old, same old?
Yeah, man, still same old out here in L.A. It's warm and humid today, so which is odd for Southern California. So maybe the apocalypse is on us.
Yeah, it's downright hot out here today for Colorado anyway. It's like 98 degrees, so I know that's probably nothing compared to Texas and, you know, places like that. But out here, that's when it starts to get just uncomfortable and just want to stay inside. At any rate, what we're going to do tonight is talk about this Oppenheimer movie is kind of a big deal right now. And it got me interested in, because I've researched a lot about World War II and all the things that have happened, Pearl Harbor, but never too much about Oppenheimer and all that. So when I saw this movie coming out, I want to make sure, because I do want to see the movie, but I want to make sure and get my facts straight before I watch the movie. That way I know how well they did or not. So I want to talk about some of that tonight, not necessarily the movie itself, but the events surrounding it, how they've unfolded and how it shaped the way we're living these days, the society we're in these days with the military industrial complex and basically how they smeared the dude. Same tactics they use these days. They've just gotten a whole lot better at it. So talk a little bit about that as well as a couple other things, the Supreme Court stuff, the FedNow rollout and all that. So first off, do you guys have any interest in actually seeing that movie? And do you think that Hollywood is going to do it justice, or is it going to be that the typical woke fest of everything else? Although Oppenheimer was liberal, so. Mm-hmm. Either one of you, take it from
okay,
there.
Okay, I'll go. We're like, you go. No, yeah, I do want to see the movie. Actually, the son-in-law actually saw it, and he's pretty intellectual, and he thought it was a pretty good movie. As far as depiction of, I haven't heard anything negative about it. The guy had a really jaded life altogether. Super smart. And I think it's really hard to depict something in a bad light, somebody in a bad light, when he really did so many good things. He just wasn't a great dude, and he was really just super analytical, and he never really thought, anything that he was doing was wrong. You could say Communist Party all day long, but he just never really believed that these people that he was talking to were trouble. He was just like, yeah, it could go bad if I was a lesser person, but he wasn't. One of the things that people can also watch too is I think there's one on YouTube that's free. It's the trial of Oppenheimer, and it actually depicts, it actually goes through the entire trial process. But lasted over a month. It was pretty interesting.
Where they railroaded him, basically?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, the problem with Oppenheimer was, not to get too deep, a whole 30 seconds into the show, but the problem with Oppenheimer and the government is the same problem that we have today. It's, you know, the guy, he made something, and then he started to have regrets about it, and then he tried to control it, and the government at the time was like, no, we've got this, and we're just going to keep making these things, and we don't want anybody else to have it. He actually tried to stand up an organization that would control everything nuclear, nuclear power, nuclear weapons, everything that was nuclear. And that kind of, he just wasn't that great of a politician.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Brian?
Yeah, I think he's, you know, 100% spot on that. You know, it's the guy created, you know, he created something that technically still right now we're worried about destroying the world. And he recognized that when he was, you know, after the fact, and when he tried to say something about it, what did they do? Russia, Russia, Russia. They labeled him as a communist, right? And you're bad. Like, let's cancel you. And you pulled his security clearances and all that. And when he got started, they knew his background. They knew his political leanings, right? But
yep,
they wanted him to create the bomb and push forward with that, which is really interesting because look where we're at with AI right now, or machine learning. Mm-hmm. That's headed towards possibly destroying society and destroying life as we know it, and you know, all in the name of, you know, I mean, the powers want it to happen. So I think it's just rinse and repeat of history right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think are you guys hearing an echo? So they're saying in the chat there's a touch of echo.
Yeah, a little bit of an echo somewhere.
Let me.
It just fixed itself.
Yeah, I'm going to turn on my echo cancellation, and I don't know if it's on. I don't know where it is. Had the same problem with Grumpy Acres Farm the other day. So
it's your fault.
I don't know if it's a restream or what it is, but what was I going to say? Oh, basically, from my understanding, the reason they railroaded this guy is because they wanted to move on to bigger, badder, better weapons, right? The hydrogen bomb, I believe. And he didn't want to have any part of that. Like LP was saying, he wanted to sort of get this under control because he understood what they had just done, mm-hmm, and wanted to sort of rein it in. He didn't understand why they needed, you know, something that could just annihilate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, he actually kind of fought through that entire project, you know, through the Manhattan Project. You know, he had two guys right up front that basically either wanted his job or didn't believe that he was the right guy from day one. You know, I think Robert Downey Jr. plays the guy that didn't believe that he could do it. And then there's another guy. He was a Polish immigrant. I think it was like P. Allen or something like that. And he's like, no, let's make the Zumba bomb. And he was all about the hydrogen bomb. And he fought him so hard during the project that Oppenheimer actually was like, okay, dude, hey, listen, I love you, but okay, go do your stuff. Let us know if you come up with anything good. And that way he could just like push him to the side and just use him as he needed. And he would just stop slowing things down, you know? So it's all typical government work, man. They get what they want out of you and then they wash their hands of you.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. I forgot what I was going to say again. This
seven.
Time. I was going to go back to what Brian was saying about these days and AI, and there seems to be like there is a lot of correlation with that because some of these guys and the machine learning, whatever you want to call it, it's not quite AI yet, I don't believe, but there seems to be quite a bit of correlation with how he did that, knowing that he was creating something that was going to fundamentally change the human race, the landscape of war and all of that. And still created it and warned people about it, which is sort of the same thing you're seeing these days with these people that are, you know, responsible for creating AI or pushing it in that direction and them warning about this stuff as well. So I think it's just interesting, one, how there's that much correlation and also how things seem to have sort of flipped because back then it was him getting just completely creamed for being a communist, right? These days, he'd almost be lauded as a hero, right? In with our government these days. I mean, it's completely opposite. So it just shows that that pendulum swing, and it's only been, what, 80 years? You know, that 100-year time frame.
It shows that the government constantly goes back to, you know, whenever they don't approve of you, what do they start slandering you as? You're not patriotic. You're a commie. You know, it's, I mean, they were using Russia in the 1940s and 50s to cancel people. And what are they doing again now? They're using the Russia stuff. If you're against the war in Ukraine, you know, not against Ukrainians, but against the war that's going on, or like, hey, why aren't we looking for peace here and trying to stop this thing that's killed? You know, I mean, Ukraine, they've lost, what, 500,000 people over there, somewhere in that ballpark now. If you're against that, oh, you're pro Putin, you're a pro commie kind of stuff now. You know, again, it's just a rinse and repeat of our less than transparent, our, you know, overt, you know, government that wants to push the military industrial complex. I mean, that's why, you know, and we're, you know, we try to say we're a constitutional republic. No, we're a neo-fascist republic, right? Because what are we doing? Everything's about the government getting in bed with corporations, about giving them the power. You know, you hear Biden talking about Bidenomics, and you hear all this stuff about the economy. And, oh, the economy's doing great. Green Jean-Pierre up there just like gaslighting everybody. Oh, everything's great. And you talk to anybody, you know, most people on the left or the right now, and they're like, yeah, cost of everything's gone crazy. But they're up there saying, no, everything's under control. It's the same old thing. You know, think about the $3 billion that the DOD, oh, well, we missed, you know, we didn't count right when we sent them our weapons.
Accounting error.
Yeah. And then there was other accounting errors in there where it's like it's a total of like $10 billion.
Oh yeah.
You know, hey, let's not push for all this money. Instead, let's just say we had an accounting error. Give it to them. We'll say we had an accounting error. Like, well, why haven't they fired the entire accounting staff then?
Yeah.
You know, would you, you know, if you had an accountant that cost that messed up like they did, you'd fire. No, it's all still around. Same thing. Cause it's all part of the narrative to get them what they want without, you know, having to be accountable, without having to listen to the American, you know, listen to the American people. Again, it's, you know, we're a neo-fascist country now. Authoritarianism. Look at all the authoritarianism, the censorship, the cancellation.
Yeah. And, you know, to add to that, you know, it's like when they were having that hearing, I watched the last hearing where they talked about that, and the, damn it. Come on, man, reach back. What's the term they use for the guys who balance the book in the military?
Pack clerks? I don't know.
No. There's actually like a dude with a title and everything. For the Department of Defense.
Magicians? Illusionists?
Yes, that's it. Gandalf. Go figure. No,
the consigliere?
No, it'll come to me later. I'll just spit up. You'll be talking about something. I'll be like, blah! But no, he didn't even show up. They were like, no, he's on vacation. He can't show up. That's how arrogant these people are when it comes to a government money and government spending, even in the DOD. It's so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you guys think that, and it seems to me that it correlates perfectly, the end of World War II, and I've got this, the Eisenhower speech. We talk about the Eisenhower speech all the time. I wanted to play just to like 30 seconds, this video of what he was warning about with the military industrial complex. But it seems like it sort of correlates with right at this time frame, where this is where the United States started to be to become the you know, the big brother of the world, basically, and saw this opportunity. And Eisenhower, I'll play this speech, but he's basically saying, yes, we need it, but watch out. Sort of the same thing you're hearing from the people in AI right now. Yes, we need it, but watch out. Let me play this real quick, and I'll get your guys' thoughts on all of that.
I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. Our military organization today bears little relation to that known of any of my predecessors in peacetime, or indeed by the fighting men of World War II or Korea. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Took me forever to find that picture of that TV with the wallpaper like that. I had to get some 1960s wallpaper in there. But he basically warned of what exactly happened. Because and I don't know, or maybe he just knew that it was going to happen, because that's the way things run in Washington. When there's money to be made, when there's, you know, when there's opportunity, these people are going to take advantage of it. Was it right around this time frame, you guys think, where everything just sort of kicked off and they saw the dollar signs and just went batshit crazy? Or was it, you know, before that, and this was just a bigger opportunity? What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I think it was probably before that, but let's not forget the guy who replaced him. The military industrial complex and the intelligence industrial complex smoked that dude. John F. Kennedy was smoked within like 18 months, 17 months, or no, not that, excuse me, almost 3 years later. Yep. He got assassinated by, you know, so, and what was John F. Kennedy doing? He comes out and says he's going to dismantle the CIA, break it in a million pieces or shatter it in a million pieces, right? What else did he do? He just said, we're pulling everybody out of Vietnam, because he went down. He saw that they had like 75 advisors had been killed in Vietnam. He's like, no, that's we're not getting Americans killed over there. 30 days after Johnson takes office, what does he do? He doubles down like, oh, we're pushing up the troop levels in Vietnam. Right. I mean, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, mm-hmm. all that stuff that we know, look back now, and we know was 100% horseshit. Right. Just to get us into a war. That was the military industrial complex happening back in Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think the term came out in around 1960, 1961, but you know, that they used to call it the Iron Triangle, mm-hmm. Is what they used to call the military industrial complex. You know, it's, you know, you start mixing, you get enough military guys and you know what I'm talking about, but you get enough military guys, and then the military guys are really smart and they're connected and they might have some rank, and next thing you know that they're working for the government. And then at some point they get some kind of aspirations to be a statesman or something like that, you know? And then hey Bob, you remember that time we were getting shot at in Korea? Well, you know, we really need some fancy bombs for Vietnam. What do you think? Well, that would be great. Well, we'd love to pay you an indefinite amount of money for an indefinite period of time so that you can indefinitely supply all the tools of war, and we'll keep that war going indefinitely. And that's exactly how it works. That's the way it's worked for every single major conflict we've ever been in. Every time, you know, the military industrial complex does not like short wars. They like long wars. And so they can, you know, people like, so they can test their weapons, and that's great. That's great. But you know what? The government pays them a lot of money to test those weapons too. So it's actually better. You know, these long wars are great for the military. They're great for the big blue guys, you know, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Hughes Aerospace. They're great. I mean, war is great, great for them.
Yeah. That Iron Triangle should be called the Big Circle Jerk, because that's exactly how it works. It should be a circle rather than a triangle. But yeah, you've got Congress basically that goes. They're the ones pulling the trigger on all this stuff. They're the ones that make the rules and the laws, so they're never going to be held accountable. It goes to the Department of Defense, all of our money. And then, yeah, these big contractors get that. And in turn, they help these congressmen get elected. And I think this isn't just a military industrial complex. There's a whole bunch of circle jerks going on in Washington. This is how things work in this country. So to me, it just seems like a huge conflict of interest. Like our concerns as voters, as Americans, don't matter. It's all these different machines, these gears that work together that we sort of get squashed in that matter, because if they can, whether we want to vote for somebody or not really doesn't matter, because if they get enough money, they can put out enough commercials and enough propaganda, enough BS to get us to want to vote. Or they can smear the other guy so badly that we just vote for this guy because that guy sucks so bad. So, I think what Brian had mentioned in the beginning, right? That, would you say neo-fascist, where it's all money. Yeah. All money just controls all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And as Americans down here, we just sit and bitch about it, and there's not really a lot.
We're not absolute fascism where government controls all the means of production and controls all the industry and everything like that. But we have but the government has a huge influence in it, and that industry has a huge influence back in government. I think it was Plato coined the term oligarchy.
Yep.
Right? We're an oligarchy. right? A small group of people that are corrupt. I mean, you can't look at our government these days and not it. You can, and you're on hallucinogenics. You have your head, you have your head up your third point of contact, right? Because you can't look at our government and not say it and say it's not corrupt. It's a corrupt through and through. We see it with what how they vote. We see it with how, you know, when you have the, you know, people going up before Congress, right? And watching if it goes, if it's something that goes against the one side, then the other side shows up with their talking points and they just start hammering it. It's not like, hey, let's get to the bottom of this. Let's do an investigation and figure it out. Everything's by, you know, everything's in order to protect their people and everything's in order to, you know, put us all last.
Yeah.
You know, if at best we're third or fourth at the trough when it comes to who does our politicians want to serve.
Yeah. And this whole Oppenheimer thing, the way they railroaded this guy, it's along the same lines as these days is where you can't really trust the science anymore. It's government. As a scientist, if you want to get anywhere, you have to follow what these people will do. Oppenheimer could have just sort of walked away after this. I was watching something where he was talking to Einstein because he had worked with Einstein at Princeton or Yale, somewhere like that. Mm-hmm. And Einstein told him, don't even go to these hearings. They need you. You don't need them. Why are you even doing this? And he went anyway. And I think Einstein basically called him an idiot for doing it. But
yeah,
but it shows you that being a scientist, it's got to be harder than hell, because if you want to be successful at what you're doing, you have to play the freaking game. And that just kind of goes to show, what do you believe as far as what the science is, and who's telling you what they actually believe, and who's furthering that narrative, who's being paid by lobbyist groups to say certain things and all that. So,
well, that goes back to the neo-fascist, the oligarchy kind of stuff, right? Do we really have scientists working in this country anymore? I don't know. I mean, we can go back to the pandemic. Look at that.
Yeah.
Right. Or whatever you want to call that. And I mean, you can see the testimony that's coming out and everything that's coming out now about when the Fauci went in there. Mm-hmm. And the initial reports out of a lot of the leading scientists were like, hey, this was created in a lab. And then then Fauci sends off an email, makes a phone call. That dude's organization gets a bunch of dollars out of the NIH. And next thing you know, oh no, you know, it's a pangolin bat, mm-hmm. you know, bat soup caused it.
Yeah.
And so where do you go with our scientists and all the scientists? I mean, the scientists all coming out and now all the stuff that they had said is being, and most people here believe to be true, mm-hmm. right back in the day. And we got censored for it. We got shut down for it. Your accounts were, you know, dismantled. Comes out to be true, mm-hmm. you know, across the board on this, you know, what pick what topic that you want to, you know, get into. Do you trust anything that our scientists say these days? I don't.
Yeah.
Why would I?
And it's difficult too. I tell you the real dirty part of that story is that there are so many scientists out there that are doing good things now that they won't ever report. They won't ever say, hey, we did this. Hey, let's get these papers together. Hey, let's prove this theory. They won't do it because if it goes against anybody's political agenda or if it goes against the talking points of a particular party, then they get shut down or ostracized, or they, you know, they could lose their livelihoods. You know, mm-hmm. they, oh, by the way, you remember that grant that you had? It's gone, you know, and that's happening every day. It's so out of control.
Well, yeah,
totally agree.
Look at the peer review process, right? Like they still throw it out there like peer review means something. Peer review doesn't mean anything anymore because peer review, you used to actually have to show your data. Mm-hmm. Now you'll have, you know, I'm not even going to mention the companies because I know this is going out on YouTube, but you'll have certain companies, you know, pharmaceutical companies go out and do a study and put out a peer review paper, but the data is their interpretation of the data, and they don't have to show their source data anymore.
Yeah.
So it, you don't really get peer-reviewed papers. You're not able to see the baseline reality that's happening out there of the mm-hmm. science.
Yeah. And frankly, nobody wants to follow a scientist anymore anyway. So it only takes one to screw it up for everybody, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's like Megan said here too. She'll never trust the science again, or we'll never trust the science again. And that's because these yahoos screw it up so much that these, we just don't know one way or the other. And I think that's the issue. These scientists could, you know, have everything absolutely correct, but these politicians and these lobbyists and corporations have screwed everything up so much and shifted the scale so much that you just don't know what, if what you're hearing is true with whether you're talking about climate change, whether you're talking about, you know, pharmaceutical companies, all that stuff. You just don't know what the actual truth is and who's paid off and who isn't these days. So yeah, it's near impossible.
Well, you know, I have a general rule where I only believe and follow pre-2019 science.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Well, and if you look at that, I mean, we go, you know, go back to whether it's science or our government, we're talking about the corruption. Look what happened, you know, in 2020, right? They didn't all say, hey, everybody, we have a serious thing going on in the world. Let's push the BS aside. Let's stop this party games and let's all sit down and do what's right to protect the American people. Mm-hmm. No, they all doubled down on the politics, right? And then, and you know, and you got Fauci doubled, you know, all political with all his stuff that he's been doing for years and everything else. And when they doubled down on the politics, nothing came out. You had, you know, you had the current president and vice president before they took office. Oh, we'll never take the shot. We'll never get the jab, right? Because we don't trust this administration. Then as soon as they get in, oh yeah, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. We should all get it. You know, they got political and you can't, and that was one of my problems with Trump. You can't get political and stuff like that. You got to put that and you have to rise above, and no one in our government did. They all just went political and we all suffer for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Temetito, is that somebody that, one of your subscribers?
Who, where, who?
Temetito Lapinga.
I don't recognize their name, but,
okay. Well, I don't either. So
yeah.
Welcome. Must be the first time, but he said the crossover I've been waiting for. Yeah. and see local, when I was telling you, I don't do a whole lot of show notes. This is exactly why. We just spent 15 minutes on something that wasn't even on my
part
list
of the show,
but it was a fantastic conversation. So it's an important, conversation. I do want to switch back to the nukes here a little bit, though, and ask you guys, because there's a lot of ethical debate, I suppose, not dilemma, debate that goes into all this stuff. Was it necessary? Because, I mean, I think you can argue both sides of this. Could we have done it differently, all that? So I guess the first one, because Oppenheimer was even conflicted about this whole thing. Was it? I think it was useful. I'll just start with my answer and I'll let you guys expand. But I think it did stop a lot of the death and of the world, because America had been in it for 4 years at this point. There were millions, I don't know how many people dead, but millions of people dead. So this one thing basically put a punctuation mark at the end of everything, even though it didn't turn out so well for a lot of people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But it did stop that. And their whole point was, if they were to go onto the shores and have to fight these battles, a lot more people would have died than what did with the bomb. So I see that as being sort of a necessary step to stop that action. But how would things be different these days if we didn't have that? Would we have more wars, or, you know, the Cold War? Would that have escalated into something bigger as far as troops fighting back and forth without nuclear weapons? What are your guys' thoughts on all that? All those 15 different things I just mentioned.
Well, I, you know, it's hard because you have to go back and look at it in time and history. I think at the same time, I remember, you know, a lot of reading and stuff I did years ago. They said, like, if we would have had to do a land invasion of mainland Tokyo, the U.S. Marine Corps would have ceased to exist. It would have been wiped out just because they had trained everybody. They had everybody so psychologically, you know, warped under all the stuff that they had down there, that they're going to fight with pieces of bamboo if they have to, right? And so it would have been, you know, we saw what happened in our modern asymmetric warfare, is trying to take over a town and cities, and how difficult that is. Well, this would be the entire population pretty much wanting to try to kill you. That being said, when looking back on it now, I'm like, we destroyed their infrastructure. Like, they weren't going to be manufacturing planes. So in a lot of ways, we could have surrounded and just let them, you know, hey, we'll wait you out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it was 100% necessary. I know we wanted the war to end. And at the same time, when you start a world war, yeah, you know what? You get what you get. You know, someone rolls in and bombs the shit out of a couple of your cities, then that's the you know, that's the repercussions you have for starting a conflict like that.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention a few years earlier, they kind of kicked us in the nuts at Pearl Harbor. So,
yeah.
Yeah. We can get into the conspiracy side of that too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's actually the end of our, the end of World War II Japan was involved. It's actually kind of controversial because we had already been bombing down to the dirt, Tokyo, all the other major cities. They had already been bombing the hell out of these people, and they weren't giving up. Then there's the whole thing like, hey, maybe we should have just dropped leaflets with pictures of us blowing up an island in the middle of nowhere and saying, we can do this, please stop. You know, there's that controversy. Oppenheimer himself actually said that it would be that a demonstration would not have worked, and that the best demonstration would be in combat. You figure they dropped two of these things, I think, within a week of each other. And I think by August 6th, it was over. It's like, we're done. We're done, guys. You can level cities. We know we're done. You know, but there's, like I said, there's also controversy of whether this actually ended the war, because there was, I think it was the Soviet Union actually took over a good chunk of Mongolia at the time and forced some surrenders in the Japanese held areas. And they say that the Japanese generals were like, man, we're losing on all the fronts. We need to give up. So that whole assumption that because we, you know, basically turned two of their cities into glass parking lots, that somehow we won, actually is in question in the history books. But I think, morally, yeah, unfortunately, it's necessary. War is an ugly thing, and there can be only one, and there has to be a loser.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think, like Ukraine, for example? Do you think Russia, if there were no nuclear weapons, and this is, even if Oppenheimer didn't do it, somebody would have done it. So it's kind of a pointless to even talk about. But nuclear weapons on the table, do you think Russia would have gone into Ukraine? Because that's the only thing really that is sort of keeping everybody else out of it, is that threat. That's the only reason North Korea is still around. Do you think it would everything would unfold differently, I suppose, is what I'm saying. It's hypothetical and hard to say, but
my gut tells me no, they probably do it the same way, you know, because they had nuclear weapons, then they didn't have nuclear weapons, then they want to be with NATO, now they can't be in NATO, but NATO still supports them. You see, it just keeps going back and forth, you know. They're killing all them, they're killing all them. You know, this is, unfortunately, this links back to our conversation about the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Drawn out wars.
Yeah. And it would also be, I hate to say this, but a lot of people don't think about it. It would also be foolish to not believe that there's not a Russian military industrial complex.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you look at what's going on in Ukraine right now, right? Everything is dragging this war out. Everything we do and what they're doing is dragging it out. And the mainstream media keeps wanting to say, oh, look at all the Russian troops we're killing, the Russian prisoners we're killing, right? They're going in there. We know they're draining their prisons. Hey, you want to get your prison sentence reduced? Like, get out, go fight 6 months on the front. You know, we saw the Wagner group doing all the stuff that the Wagner group was doing. That was all contractors, right? They're dragging out the war. Putin, their economy is not suffering. Our mainstream media keeps wanting to say that the Russian economy is doing terrible, but they have BRICS going on. Yep. They're selling their oil. They're pushing out their oil. Europe's sucking. I mean, after somebody blew up the Nord Stream pipeline, that hurt them, but they're going to get that going again. You know, we're in a bad spot in this, you know, we've tried to, not we, there's been talks of trying to sue for peace, and, you know, we go in there. No, we're not taking any of this peace stuff you're offering. No peace talks. Who wouldn't want the peace talks when hundreds of thousands of people are getting killed?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, so,
well, you know, The other thing too is, you know, I don't know if it's real or not, but you remember it was about a month. It was about a month back where Putin actually had a press conference where he held up a peace document.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Hey, listen, we tried to do this. We really did. We had, there was actually agreement." And the next day someone said, "Eh, we changed our mind."
Yeah, there was in April of last year, and I don't know who it was from the UK. They sent over a delegation, was like, no, you're not doing this peace stuff.
Yeah. A proxy through a proxy. Isn't that interesting?
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me if all of these, the big players on this stage, they're completely okay with all of this stuff going on. The loss of lives is secondary to the amount of money that's being made, and they wouldn't ever say anything like that publicly, but I guarantee you that the fact that the military industrial complex, and you mentioned it, Local, that in all every country's probably got some sort of semblance of, if they're big enough, of this military industrial complex. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like Oppenheimer said too, and even Eisenhower, it's there's parts of it are necessary, right? You need to defend your borders, even though we're doing a piss poor job of that. You need to pay the men and women of the military. You need to do a lot of those things. So that's part of it as well. But it's the unnecessary crap that started happening after World War II, and maybe even Korea, that it's more to just keep the machine running. We're fighting wars over oil and things like that, and not sovereignty and the things that we used to be about these days.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, so if everybody hasn't figured it out yet, there's two playlists. Okay. One playlist is rah, rah, America greatest, red, white, and blue. We love everybody. The melting pot. And the other playlist is, how much money can we make off of this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let's see. Oh, by the way, I remembered it's called a comptroller. The comptroller did not show up for the DOD. I told you, I was going to be like,
yeah,
you did it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you think about it, man, look back at the war in Iraq. We all know now, right? Everybody's aware of it. The war in Iraq was illegal, right? We were lied to get us in a war. Crazy that none of the people that lied to us, mm-hmm. Are in prison for killing. I mean, not counting contractors and other Americans, 5,000 plus Americans died in that war.
Yep.
Why? For the military industrial complex to make money.
Yeah.
We sold the lives of Americans.
Yep.
That's how little the military industrial complex cares about people. It doesn't care. Obviously doesn't care about our soldiers, doesn't care about our citizens. Definitely didn't care about the close to a million Iraqis that got killed. Now lay that over. How great is it? You see when we, with Ukraine, they talk about, well, not one American soldier has to have their blood shed. No, we're just going to get hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians killed.
Yeah, exactly.
Destroy the country. And what's coming next is, as soon as they get this thing to slow down, you're going to see Raytheon, you're going to see Halliburton, everybody Roger up to go rebuild of all of Ukraine that's been destroyed at trillions of more U.S. taxpayer dollars.
Yeah. And you're right. And, you know, it's funny, too, because you remember they tried to do that in Afghanistan and it didn't work. They did it in Iraq, right? They put out everything in those coin operations. They put everything into play, and they made that work in Iraq, and it made gajillions of dollars. And then they tried that in Afghanistan, and it kind of blew up in their face. And the one that I remember the most is the natural gas station in the middle of nowhere that was supposed to service the natural gas, the cars that ran on natural gas, and there were none in the entire country.
Yeah.
Yeah, they come in and they we can do that, no problem. That's that government contracting. They Roger up to it. The government gives them a buttload of money, and it doesn't matter if it's successful; it just gets spent.
You know, we get all pissed off at the Chinese, or our country says, "Look what the Chinese are taking over the world." You know how they're taking over the world? They're not going in and starting wars and starting conflicts. Right. You know what they do? They go into a place and they say, "Hey, you have this great port facility. How about if we build it, make it really good? We put a bunch of your people, your locals, we hire them to do the manual labor. We'll manage it and run it for you since you don't really know how to do that. And it'll inject tons of money into your economy. We'll go pave the streets in the area. We'll make it good," right? That's that winning the hearts and minds things that we always talk about. But it's weird that we talk about winning hearts and minds at the end of the gun,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But the Chinese are being successful at it. Maybe we need to get off the stick and actually just try, hey, let's be a good partner in this. No, I mean, it boggles my mind because I fell for it for so long You know, it's one of the reasons I'm like, yeah, Roger up, send me overseas. Let me go work, do all this work overseas and stuff. Cause we have to be right in what we're doing. We would never make those mistakes of Vietnam again. And dude, we've been doing it for 20, Vietnam went what from basically from 64 to 73, give or take around in there.
Around that, yeah.
And that was the long war. We'll never make that mistake again. And now we've been at war for 20 some years. We're building more military bases in Syria. Why are we in Syria? Oil for the military industrial complex.
And illegally.
Illegally, exactly.
Hey, Grumpy Acres is in the chat. What's going on, Grumpy? And go subscribe to his channel, anyone listening. Oh, and by the way, you can go and subscribe to LP's channel, Local Prepper, too. I forgot to mention that at the beginning. I don't have the link below this video, but if you just go to YouTube, Local Prepper, I believe you're on Rumble as well, right?
I am. I am, okay. Yes.
In the podcast show notes, I'll make sure and leave all that stuff in there, though.
Yeah.
But Grumpy Acres was talking about one thing, and it's sort of the same thing both of you were just talking about. That's why I wanted to pull this up, was one thing certain, there's no good guys anymore on the world stage, and that includes us. And I think the sooner people start to sort of realize that and hold these politicians accountable, because like we talked about the Iron Triangle, where Congress is basically responsible for everything. We bitch and whine about the president of the United States all the time, but honestly, it's the whole setup that has, you know, that is making more of the decisions than the president is. And I think as Americans, we probably have more opportunity, maybe just a little bit, even if it's just a little bit, to get those turds out of there, although it's just going to get filled up with other turds. But I think the sooner that we realize the fact that, hey, America isn't the quote unquote greatest, the freest, the best country in the world, and we don't do all this bad stuff. We do it for good reasons and all that. I think the sooner American people realize that and start pushing to have these yahoos in Washington held accountable, the better things could possibly get. I don't know if that's a pipe dream or not, but.
Yeah. There was no question there, but.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I agree. You know, it's difficult. It's difficult that's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
You know, especially, you know, I mean, so I walked in the dark water for a little while. So it's, you know, when you get done with that whole rah-rah mission accomplishment, troop welfare, you know, when you get past all of that in the military, you start to see very quickly that it's a great game to play for 20 years. But, yeah, you know, it doesn't matter. None of it matters because, you know, I mean, the only time a politician cares about somebody who is over in a bad place is when it's one of their kids. That's the only time. I've never seen that. I think with the exception of maybe Reagan, I think that I actually have seen where there was like some kind of sincerity there, you know. So it's difficult to believe that America is the greatest country on earth anymore. We all want to believe it. And we do have a certain way of life that is better, that is greater than any other place on the planet. But let's face it, we have just allowed so many chuckleheads, you know, to take these positions of power, and they just use them for all the wrong things. Mm-hmm. And they do need to be removed. They do need to be, hey, let's, dude, step down, because, you know, if this continues past an election, you may not be able to step down. Something else might happen, you know. Yeah. And in this community, as YouTubers, as you know, developers, you know, we kind of have a responsibility, because I guarantee every one of you, all three of us here have been asked, you know, What do you think about this? You know, and it's time to rise. And we've all seen that.
Yeah.
And so we know what's out there, you know, but, you know, it's always about, only break glass in event of war situation, mm-hmm. You know, and it's difficult not to want to break that glass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the ideal of America, you know, and I'm sure I'm right there with you guys too, and stuff, you know, I still, like, when I think about this, when I think about America not being this great country that does good stuff around the world, like, that's what we're here for. We're here to do good and help people. right? It makes me feel sick. It gives me a knot in my stomach. Like right now, I feel sick even thinking about the fact that we're not a great country. We have a great ideal, right? The U.S. Constitution is probably, you know, one of the greatest living documents ever written on the formation of a government. But look what's happened over the years, right? Go back to the 17th Amendment. We got rid of the direct elect of senators. Why? Because that directly got in the way of the federal government, you know, being able to wield power and do what they want. It took away states' rights, right? And so the whole time, at some point, we started changing the Constitution to give the leaders more unchecked power. And now it's just it's just rampant, right? Yeah. We don't have a balanced budget. They just go put more ones and zeros in a computer, drive up inflation. They don't have to have any cost controls, you know, like, oh, we'll just keep going in debt. We'll do whatever we want. And the American people will suffer. There's no benevolence. How do we expect our government to be benevolent around the world when it's not even benevolent towards the people, our own citizens of the country? They don't give two shits. What they care about is the four or five richest counties that surround Washington, D.C. in the United States. You know, that's where the richest counties are. Why? It's where all the money's made. I mean, you know, just like LP, I sat in that, you know, I was neck deep in that for a little while. And it's one of the things I have a resume that it speaks to working in the D.C. area and working in the military industrial complex. I get job offers. And I'm like, no, I just talked with a good friend and he might be watching for the first time today. And he just left a super senior position in the federal government because he's like, I couldn't do it anymore. He saw between the corruption and everybody and no one being on the side of the merit, you know, of the people. He's like, I couldn't be part of it anymore. And I left. And it's like, and he's struggling with it. But I think everybody goes through that. But that they don't care about America. They say they wrap it in, you know, they wrap it in a box with red, white, and blue wrapping paper. They put the blue bow. They label it for, hey, here, this is for a patriot. And then they sell you some war somewhere. Look at when Trump tried to get out of Syria. When he tried to get out, what did the media and everybody jump up? Oh, you're abandoning the Kurds. And they made it sound like we're abandoning the Christian Kurds that were in Kurdistan, in northern Iraq, when the Kurds that we were abandoning were the YPG. They were Marxists. They tortured people to death. Not that we didn't torture people in our own overseas CIA prisons, but they tortured people. They did terrible things, but they sold it like, oh, these are good people. We need to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, what happened in Benghazi? We were over there playing screw around games with weapons. We were selling weapons to Al-Qaeda. We were literally arming Al-Qaeda. That's part of why Benghazi went down. So again, we don't have this benevolent government. Unfortunately, like I said, it makes me feel sick that we should be. We have the ability to be the shining light that tells the world this is what we need to go by. This is the standard of morality, the standard of values we need to have. But our values all in the greenback.
Yeah,
it's all in power.
Absolutely true. You know, two things. One, we are Rome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's that easy. Two, do you know what you get for 20 years of service as a government servant? You get a pension, but they give you a little tiny circle lapel pin.
Yeah.
That's what they give you. The day I saw that being awarded to somebody, I was out in a week. I was like, there's no kidding. I did 33 years. I was like, I'm done. This is stupid.
And you could hear, you know, I always, when I left working for the government and stuff like that, I equated it to, you know, at Get Smart when Max Smart's walking through the tunnel and all the metal doors are clanging behind him, clang, clang. As soon as you're done, they're like, they have no use. They don't give two shits about you.
Yeah.
It's what can you do for us now? And how can you do us, you know, how can you help us be corrupt and play the game?
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing, and then we got to move on. The day I retired, the day I was like, I'm done, they walked me out the front door. They took my security badge, and they turned around and walked away. And it was like I was just abandoned.
Yeah.
That's our government.
You couldn't get back in, though.
That's our U.S. government. So,
yeah.
All right, what are we going to talk about next? We got minutes.
Something happy.
Yeah, well, I don't know if there's anything happy with this conversation. He talks about nukes and government. But I do have a couple comments here. And Tony said something here, and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on this, because this sort of goes into the same thing we were talking about with right after World War II and the whole UN and all of that stuff. But the United States needs to stop helping other countries. We need to help ourselves. There's a case to be made, I suppose, that America being big brother is necessary, or at least it was necessary post World War II to sort of get everything in line and in order and all that. But is it still necessary for the United States? I mean, take Taiwan, for example. I think there's a case to be made that it is necessary for us to be there to protect them, right? Because if we weren't there, China would almost absolutely have taken them over. But what are your guys' thoughts on America playing the big brother of the world then as opposed to now, as far as how useful it is?
Okay. All right. So there is. I'm gonna sound like a government guy now. So there is a balance that has to be kept. You know, if you talk about it on the corrupt side, hey, well, it's good to have friends, and the mafia pays their friends well. You know, so it's good to have friends in all over the world. We are over the world, all over the world. We are Rome. They use our currency. We are Rome. Okay. So it's good to have that. But you know what? It is what people, when people say, like, make that statement that you just showed there, what they're really talking about is, like, you know, we spent $500 billion to do whatever overseas. Okay. Maybe it's arm a country or go to war, whatever it is. And then we have vets that are walking the streets. You know, we have homeless problems. We have all the cities in California. They're all giant homeless shelters, you know? And people automatically, they just assume that simple checkbook mentality that, hey, I could be spending money on good stuff over here in my country instead of bad stuff over in that other country. And they're right, but there's got to be a balance. And we are significantly imbalanced. We spend way too much money overseas. And it doesn't help that not only we just don't have an inflation problem here in the United States, there's inflation problems all over the world. And that means that more money has to be spent. You know, the dollars are going to be bigger. It's like our budget used to be, $31 billion a year. And now we're up in like $1 trillion a year, something like that. You know, and I'm guessing here, but it's significantly different in size as to what we're spending because of inflation, because we're forced to spend more bigger dollars, you know, and we have to find that balance. It's like, bring back the troops. All right, Dynamo, we brought the troops back. Now we got to train the troops. No, we don't need money to train the troops. We got to feed the homeless. No, we can't feed the homeless. We've got to pay for an insurrection in Ishwagandha, you know? So it's difficult to find that balance. And go.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. I think you have to find the balance. I also think we look at it in simplistic terms, like, well, we can't help them. We got to help, you know, help ourselves. And I 100% agree with that. But I also agree that the helping ourselves starts with getting our system under control. You know, I, like you mentioned California, I'm out in Los Angeles right now. Anywhere I go, I see mobs of homeless people. I have the Citizen app, and I live in an area where there wasn't a lot of crime growing up, you know, but every day I'm seeing, like, you know, someone getting mugged, someone being assaulted within a mile or two of where I live. And, you know, you look at, like, for the homeless situation, what have we done? And it's one of the things that has driven me nuts about the homeless situation since I first was able to start voting when I was a kid. We put all this money into it, but does it go to the homeless? No, the money goes to the people who say they're helping the homeless, but there's no incentive for them to actually help the homeless. And I think we do that, you know, it's for them to keep making money. It's like the military, it's the homeless industrial complex. Keep the homeless going so we can keep making money. I think if we went in and we actually had a values aligned system where we said, hey, this is how we should approach things, let's do this right, then we would have the money to help the homeless. We'd have the money to make sure everybody in America doesn't go, you know, you have waitresses and hairstylists that if they get one serious illness, they're bankrupt. They lose everything they have. Right. Yeah. And so we can fix that in the country. But the problem is we have a system that allows for the corruption. And if we were able to fix that, we could also fix what's going on overseas. We talked about earlier with the China deal, mm-hmm. right? Let's go truly help countries. Right now, our way of helping a country is to get a country like Ukraine destroyed, get a country like Iraq destroyed, and then spend trillions of dollars pumping money into the industrial complex to rebuild it. And even then, we only do a half-assed job at it because once they have the money, there's no reason incentive for them to actually spend money to make sure the job's done right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's how do you supervise a country?
What's that?
I said, and how do you supervise a country?
Yeah, right.
That was probably corrupt. You think about all the countries that we've gone into in the last 30 years, every single one of them was corrupt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the standard operating procedure in most of those countries, right? Like when I was working in Africa, you built that corruption into your plan. And then what was hilarious was the U.S. government would say, well, you can't deal with the corruption. It's everywhere. Like, how do you not deal? You know,
hey, why did you send me these boxes of money?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, No Chances said LP is a good addition to the survival preppers. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a fun conversation tonight.
I agree.
You phrased it really well, LP, when you talked about how when people say that what they mean is that the aid is going to the wrong places. But everything you guys have been talking about has been the things that there's no return on. So that's why those things don't happen. That's why there's not more effort put into the homeless vets, the medical part of it, that, you know, homelessness in general. That's on a bigger scale, but there's no return on that stuff. There is return on, you know, the weapons and the ammunition and the things that are getting sent overseas and just left in Afghanistan or wherever. Yeah. There is return on that stuff. So that stuff takes priority rather than that guy that just retired. Here's your pin. See you later.
Yeah.
We don't need you anymore. You're not going to make us any more money.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that a lot of people don't think about it. So, you know, we're talking about the military industrial complex. If we were to let this one sink in for a second. If we were to get rid of all the NGOs that are operating inside the United States, we would have so much money available to these other to actually help people. The NGOs just like we're here to help everybody. So the government gives them money. Donors give them money. It doesn't matter if they're Soros or whatever. And then that money kind of gets filtered. Maybe we put a fence around. Yes, that's what we'll do. Let's spend $1 billion and let's put a fence around the what do they call it? What do they call the camps? Where the old homeless people, the shelters,
right?
And the homeless encampments that used to be parks where you played with your kids and dog.
You mean the unhoused people?
Yes, let's put a fence around them to protect them, and let's pay top dollar for it. You know, because that's what NGOs do, and that's literally all they are. They're like the complex we were talking about before. You know, they're just sneakier. They're not out in the open like the military.
Yeah.
Well, and because they're an NGO, the way the government people, they have their ad campaigns or their about us page says how benevolent and how wonderful they are.
That's right.
Again, you know, they took one of the commuter parking lots, probably about a mile from where I'm at right now. And they put it into like a tiny home village. And when I say tiny homes, they're like 6 by 8, 10. There's like probably a bed and maybe like a little, you know, like a place where you can hang some clothes inside. Right. And in talking with people, what they're telling me, and it's they're not homeless. There are unhoused neighbors. You can't call them homelessness. That's apparently disparaging against somebody if they don't have a home.
Yeah.
So it's their unhoused neighbors now, because I'm sure we spent $100,000 figuring that term out. But the requirements for a person to get in there is so stringent that a lot of those are being left, vacant. Because you got to fill out this paperwork. You got to do this. You know, there's a lot of them that say you have to have a clean drug test. You're a homeless person in Los Angeles. Where pot's legal. I guarantee you there's not a whole lot of clean homeless people running around.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's one of their reasons why they're homeless.
Yeah.
They need help.
Yeah. Well, if all those places were full, then the NGOs wouldn't be able to say we need more money unless they wanted to build more of those places, which nobody would put up with.
You know, go ahead.
You just made me realize something. It's off subject, though. This will blow your mind. So that app that you were called, what you call it, the Citizen app?
Citizen app, yep.
You know what that is, man?
It's a total tracking app, man.
Yeah, it's a heat map.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you know,
which app was that?
The Citizen app. It tells you when crime's happening and stuff like that. It, you know, around you, and it's wild. You know, they when you talk about the NGOs and you talk about helping people, we talk about the vets, right? The Veterans Administration has the probably has the market cornered on how many people it can get together that have PTSD and all the progress it can make if it actually put some effort into truly trying to help people, truly trying to figure out, hey, how can we, you know, maybe one person goes through basic training, how can we educate them so that they understand how their brain works so we can deal, that they can help them deal with PTSD when they're starting to have problems. But nothing's happened with it.
Yeah.
Right? Like nothing happens with it. So I think that's a very obvious symptom or sign of, you know, a runaway system that doesn't truly care about the people. Like you said, once you get out, the government doesn't care about you. You're no use to you anymore.
Yeah. Hey, Lisa asked in the chat, what's an NGO? It's non-governmental agency, right?
Agency.
NGA.
Yeah. And the funny thing is it's like, so they act like they're a government organization. You know, they set themselves, they structure themselves, they operate like they're a government organization, but they're not.
Yeah.
They first started popping up in war zones.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, oh, we can apply this in other places.
Yeah, they try to say they're a non-government organization, but they get all their fund, most of their funding comes through the government and stuff. And a lot of it, especially the overseas organizations, we hear about NGOs overseas, comes from the CIA and different organizations like that. When I was in South Sudan, there were two organizations I dealt with, one called RTI, the Republican Training Institute, and NDI, the National Democratic Institute, mm-hmm. right? And they're both there to teach the South Sudanese rebels how to have a government, right? Mm-hmm. Where do you think all their funding came from?
Yeah,
CIA.
Exactly. Yeah. everybody loves a liaison officer.
Right?
That's pretty interesting. So it's just another way for government to skirt, to get around the, you know, rules and laws and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's basically another part of that whole deep state thing that everyone talks about. It's the deep state is this nebulous thing. These mainstream media people love to talk about how it's just not a real thing and people don't know what they're talking about. There's no deep state, but there isn't a defined set of people like that have their card in their wallet. I'm part of the deep state. But when you think about all these NGOs, you think about all the lobbyists, the corporations, and where all this money, all, you know, the big circle jerks, like I was talking about earlier, all this money is going. That is the deep state. So yeah, NGOs, I didn't know that about the, you know, basically training other countries.
Yeah. Well, what do you do when you train those people, when the people that go through there, what are you doing? You're talking to government officials. What are they doing? They're making contacts in the government. It's how the CIA gets their inside sources and all this stuff. Yeah. I mean, you can look at the NGOs across the board. It's the government writes the rules. They say, okay, the government can't do this. But if you're not part of the government, you can do it. So let's get some non-governmental organizations, because obviously in the name, it's not part of the government. So we can do it. It's just like, remember we did the episode here where we said, you know, the National Defense Authorization Act signed by Obama aside, the government can't use U.S. Military troops on U.S. soil, right? But National Guard troops can be used against people on U.S. soil. So you have how many special operations units around the country that are National Guard, right? Oh, they're not federal troops, so we can use them against people. Where do they get all their training? Where do they get all their stuff? U.S. military.
Yeah, yeah. I think in that show, too, I was talking about how my idea of National Guard is the regular guy on the weekends going, and you were telling me how that is not the case whatsoever.
Well, it is. I mean, there's plenty of those guys and they do a good job. You know, I mean, they go out when there's a disaster and they help. But there's also a lot of active units that have really high, a lot of experience, a lot of high end military that they're operating here on the U.S. soil.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So one last thing before we get out of here, I wanted to cover, we'll get back to the nukes a little bit. And I know locals kind of having issues with his internet. We'll see if that clears up, but
there it is.
But I, going back to the nukes things, where do you think, because Oppenheimer and it, back then, he was correct so far that sort of, I put in my notes the Aussie song, because that's what comes to mind. The only thing that keeps the peace, thank God for the bomb. But, and he's been right so far, because it has stopped, you know, I think anyway, a lot of, you know, things that might have happened haven't happened because there's a threat from us, from Russia, from whatever, from wherever. So do you guys think that continues, or is it still that dark cloud looming over our heads of at any time, basically we could just wipe ourselves out? And I should, when I ask a question, I ought to point at somebody or phrase it to somebody instead of saying you go from there. So we'll let Brian start with that one.
Yes and no, right? I think part of the problem with nukes is that more and more the ability of non-responsible, and when I say responsible, I'm putting it in air quotes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Non-responsible actors, terrorists, whoever, that have an agenda of getting a hold of those increases, right? And I think it's, you know, it was like when I was on jump status in the military. I knew that if I, depending on how many jumps you have, eventually you're going to have an accident. Eventually you're going to have a really bad landing and you're going to get busted up. Every one of my buddies that stayed in for a long time all have, you know, fractured backs and different stuff because eventually they had a bad parachute landing. I think the same thing happens when you get nukes. They're in the mix. At some point, someone's going to get hit, and whether it's with a terrorist organization or whatever, I think that the farther we go down the road, with all this, it has to happen at some point. I don't see us not having that happen. I think so far that it hasn't happened speaks to at least the chuckleheads in charge probably recognize like, this would be a really bad thing, mm-hmm. But that's just my two cents. What do you think, Opie?
Mutual destruction. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You're right. You know, it's like the law of probability. Everybody gets into a car accident somewhere between 1 to 3 to 5 years. It's a fender bender. It's a major accident. It wasn't their fault, but they still bend some metal every 3 to 5 years. So it's like the longer you drive, something's going to happen. So completely agree. But, you know, I grew up during the Cold War, and, you know, I've got my Cold War certificate someplace in a folder. That's something that we lived with every single day. And, you know, duck and cover was at my age, it wasn't that common, but we did it like once a year, you know. It's like when we started seeing, I think it was just this last year, we started seeing more activity from bear bombers, out there on the Alaskan frontier out there between Russia and Alaska. That was every day for us, you know, so you kind of become numb to it a little bit. But that whole mutually assured destruction is probably the cornerstone of nuclear warfare. Now, here's the big thing. If one of these chuckleheads, I love that one, decides to lose his mind and push the button or think that, we can have a little nuclear war. I think it's pretty important. You know, even as a young recruit in the Marine Corps, one of the first things that they taught you had to memorize was the nuclear protocol for an exchange of nuclear weapons. If nuclear weapons are used, we will use nuclear weapons till the extent of the war. That's it. We're not going to say, you tossed one, we'll toss one, or you will toss two. That's not how it works. So that mutually assured destruction really does work. And the big thing to think about is if that actually happened, if there was actually a nuclear exchange, the military industrial complex just went out of business.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would think, now we have to fight a war. We really need them. Really? Do me a favor. Go and fire up all those factories that Raytheon has or Boeing or whatever it may be. It's all done with. All our little tiny bullet launchers and pea shooters are completely useless. And there's no more military industrial complex.
Yeah, and that goes to what you were talking about earlier. That goes for other countries as well, not just us.
I
think the thing that makes me nervous right now when it comes to nukes is Ukraine, and not whether we're going to get in this slinging nukes with Russia off the bat, but that you have so many competing interests over there, and none of it, again, about ending the war, that the idea of a tactical nuke, either through a false flag or something else happening, going off. You know, you have this war where things are a little bit out of control with these two sides. I think that's in play, and it's just the idea of a tactical nuke going off and the repercussions that has, whether that, you know, starts something bigger or whatever. I think that's probably the, for me, the part that makes me the most nervous with a lot of the stuff that's happening over there.
Yeah. And that's true because, hey, here, let me throw one at you. What happens when Ukrainian SF guys decide to go snatch up one of those portable nuclear weapons in Crimea?
Right.
Does that get reported? Oh, hell yeah, because the Ukrainians will drive it right back across the border and say, look what we got, guys, just like they did with all the tanks that they've captured.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then now you're back to Ukraine, the nuclear power, which could actually stop the war. It could actually level the playing field. But then again, would they use it? No, they're not that dumb. They only have one.
Is it Zelensky, though? Who knows? Hey, real quick, yeah, no you guys were talking about the, well, Brian said the quote unquote responsible nations, and I wanted to see your thoughts on this. But Charlie said in the chat, I heard through a few other pages that they were concerned about an EMP attack from North Korea directed at the U.S. This is one of those quote unquote, I suppose they're pseudo responsible. Anybody that is concerned about the survival of their nation is going to be apprehensive about using it. And that's kind of what you guys were alluding to, was these bad actors getting their hands on these things that could give a crap about the longevity of Russia or North Korea. That's why I just don't. I mean, I think it's a lot of hot air from North Korea, but I don't think that they would do something like that, because it would be almost immediate, complete destruction of the North Korean regime. Right now, they just kind of get by and they skirt the system and everybody just leaves them alone. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about that, as far as that, as well as the EMP factor as well? We really haven't touched on that. Go for it, LP.
Well, EMP is a first strike weapon. It's always going to be a first strike weapon. So, and if they have the ability to do it, they're going to do it. So make sure you've got water, food, and security. And don't forget to buy my EMP shield, affiliate, Local Prepper. I always throw that one out whenever we talk about an EMP. But one of the things that people don't think about is North Korea has, I really hate to say this, they have too many intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Too many?
Or they think they're intercontinental anyway. I don't think they've actually got that far. But they have too many of them. They have a storage problem. So they have to fire one off every so often. And they always drop them in the same spot. And it's really kind of made me think, it's like, is there like the, is it like the Simpsons three eyeballed fish floating around somewhere between, you know, Taiwan and freaking the Sea of, the Sea of Japan or something like that, where they all, or I think it's the Yellow Sea. They just keep dropping them in there. You know, there's going to be the spot where nobody can go, you know? I don't know if that's a problem or not. Hell, we don't even know if they're actually active missiles. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But they do. They make them, and they have a storage problem for some reason. And so they fire them off every so often. It's just that easy. And then there's testing technology. I don't really put North Korea is constantly just trying to stay relevant on the international stage. That's really what they're doing. You know, hey, listen, if we could send a basketball player and a tennis player over there, and they can be friends. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's no hopes for McDonald's, that's for sure. But, you know, I mean, just let's just send like a female soccer player over there and see what happens.
Yeah. I think my biggest concern with EMP stuff is whether China or Russia or whoever gets to the point where they think we're irrelevant, they don't need us. You know, people say, well, China needs us for their economy. And they can play the game on that and say, well, you know, we can do without them for a while. And they, if they ever get to the point where they want our industrial resources or something like that, that's where the fear I would have, because to them, if they can drop our power grid, right, and then, you know, come in 5 years later or 3 years later and mop up, you know, I could see something like that. I think that's probably a greater threat than North Korea, you know, because every time North Korea does something, people run over. What can we do to help you out? You know, I mean, North Korea is living under basically an EMP. I think, you know, yeah, Pyongyang that has lights at night. Everywhere else in the country is pretty much blacked out. And, you know, they got to get some sleep before they go work in the salt mines the next day.
Yeah.
Hey, Gus over on Rumble said that North Korea can't move without China's okay. And then sort of along those same lines, Charlie here, the chat said, don't think North Korea or China could build. Oh, that's the wrong damn. Let me find the right one. Here we go. Charlie said, I don't think North Korea or China. Wait, man. What? Where is? Oh, here it is. Gee, my knees. Cronin said, I can't see China using North Korea. I can see China as using North Korea as a scapegoat. So that goes along the same lines of what Gus was saying. I could see sort of something like this where China kind of says, hey, man, it wasn't us. I mean, maybe that's a little bit out there. You don't think so, LP?
No. Dude, they've got teams. They got families of teams. They have midgets with giant computer screens that are watching these things move around. Yeah. You know, if somebody farts in one of these plants, you know, they know this thing has moved.
True.
You know, it's no.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can see that then. Yeah. So, and I agree with you. North Korea is, a lot of people like to talk about them because they put on this show every once in a while, but I just don't know how much I buy of all that, the BS.
Well, here's the scary thing about North Korea. They get better at their nuclear weapons every time they use one.
Yeah.
They're taking the Elon Musk engineer approach to this. Hey, let's fire one into the sea. Let's do it. Let's see what happens. Let's put some sensors on it, maybe a couple of cameras. Hey, let's put it on YouTube, you know? Let's do something with this. And that's what they do every single time. And they've gone from this ground-based 1940s 45 degree angle rocket thingy to, oh, by the way, I can just roll right up, pop the hood, and boom, it's gone, you know? Yep. The technology is it's moving at a very, very rapid rate in North Korea. So they get better at this every single time.
Well, and they're also working, you know, they're also giving some of that technology, working on that with the Iranians. The Iranians already have a good missile program, and we know that they're close to getting, you know, that they're either, if they haven't gotten it, they're close to getting their nukes up and running. And at some point, you know, Israel can keep doing what Israel does, but eventually, you know, the little boy, you know, the little Dutch boy can't put it, you know, it doesn't runs out of fingers to put in the, you know, putting the holes in the
bag. Yeah. I think that North Korea is probably stringing Iran along just to get their little launch technology.
Yeah.
They don't want to get, that's the same thing going back to Oppenheimer. They didn't want anybody else to have, what was it? Truman. He didn't want anybody else to have nuclear capabilities. That was the whole thing. That was one of the reasons they locked him down. They killed his security clearance and they just took control of his life. Yeah, right. You know,
And Oppenheimer basically said he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about to Truman.
Yeah, I guess. I don't even know if I got the president right.
So you guys had mentioned Iran, and I wanted to – do you think Iran is sort of – are they on a higher playing field as far as threat level goes than North Korea? Or at this point, are they sort of the same thing? Is it something that you're more concerned about the future of what they're doing rather than North Korea? Because North Korea, while they may be getting better, they're sort of – I don't know if I want to say limited to what they can do because of their economy, although China's probably helping them out. But what are your thoughts, LP, on is Iran more of a concern than North Korea? Or are they on the same playing field or is it different?
I think we should be significantly concerned about Iran because if they get the chance to wipe us off the planet, they'll do it.
Yeah.
They won't think twice about it. If they had, excuse me, if they had the capability to do it right now, we'd be gone.
Even if it means their demise?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you might want to read the Quran.
Yeah, I suppose
not, that's... Not to say make that sound mean, but, you know, in fact, they in that ideology, if they were to destroy the infidel, they would be, they'd be king shit in their version of heaven.
True.
I think the part with Iran is their ability to wipe Israel off the map and what, mm-hmm. and what that would lead to dropping a nuke on Israel, or, you know, you have the West Bank, all the different stuff that they can get nukes in to try to cause problems with Israel. I mean, you know, you look at Jordan's a fairly liberal country when, you know, as far as Middle East countries go. And I remember the last time I was in Jordan, I'm sitting there and they, just like the Gideons leave a Bible in the room. Their version of the Gideons leave a Quran in the room, and I open it up, and the inside cover of the Quran is a map of the Middle East. You know what's not on the map of the Middle East? Israel.
That's right. It doesn't exist in that world.
So I think that for world instability, I think that's the problem where Iran really comes in, because then what does everyone do? And if you don't respond to that at some level, then that just gives them the go ahead to like, hey, man, what do we need to do to get one into the U.S.? I'm sure they'd love to nuke New York or Washington, D.C. or, you know, one of our big cities and say, hey, look what we did. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a good point. Yeah. North Korea is sort of the, you know, he's just looking for attention, whereas Iran, there's no doubt if given the opportunity, they would do something.
Well, remember after 9/11, right? What happened? You had most of the Middle East were cheering what was going on.
Yeah.
It would give Iran huge, their government huge stature. And so, you know, I mean, hey, the Iranian government's totally, a lot of the people, my last haircut was from a lady who had to sneak out of Iran on a camel and horses and go to another country because she was being persecuted and her kids were being persecuted. Evil country. They don't, you know, they kill their own people all the regular time. They wouldn't have any problem with that. And I think it would raise their world stature in the Muslim world.
Yeah. Sort of like back in, you know, Japan with the kamikazes and why they wanted to drop the bomb, because Japan had everybody to the point where they didn't mind dying. They didn't mind, for the cause. The kamikazes going to Pearl Harbor didn't. They knew what they were going in. They knew what they were going in for. They were in for. And they went anyway. Sort of that same mentality when you think about the Middle East, where they're just like, hey, it doesn't matter. The afterlife, you know, the 100, you know, however many virgins, all that crap. The afterlife is what really matters. That's why they're willing to blow themselves up in the middle of a grocery store and crap like that. So, yeah, that is far more concerning than some fat dude in North Korea that wants to launch a missile every once in a while.
Yeah, North Korea has to get the permission of China to do any of that. I mean, they're not going to do anything without Chinese permission, man.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we are going to get out of here tonight. Before we go, LP, thank you for being on. We'll have to open invitation to be on the show. This is kind of fun for me, just get all three of our thoughts on all this stuff. It's a whole lot easier for me, too, when there's three of us and we didn't talk over each other too much. So I want to say thank you for being on tonight. This is a really great conversation, really fun show. Not that all of our shows aren't fun and great, but, you know, this one, this one was good. Before we get out of here, make sure to let everyone know again where they can find you, what you're up to. You're doing some stuff on Discord as well, Rumble, YouTube. Just let everyone know.
I'm everywhere, but my focus right now is actually the YouTubes. I need 50 more subscribers to get the 4,000 so I can stick it in YouTubes. You know what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything else is fine. We're good on Discord. We've got 1,000 over there. Everything else is good, but I really want to get beef up on the YouTube side. Just Local Prepper, all one word. If you're interested in anything I've said today, you can find me at localprepper.net. I am on all the platforms, so I'm like a virus that won't go away.
Start calling you COVID.
You had to say it, didn't you? You had to do it. That's it. Oh, I didn't know we were playing a game of last word.
That's awesome. All right. Well, speaking of last word, you got any pearls of wisdom or anything like that, Brian, before we get out of here tonight?
All right, everybody have a good week. Be safe and keep your head on a swivel.
Yeah. Appreciate everyone joining the chat. Again, we appreciate it, LP. And we will talk to everyone later. Take care and prepare.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Survival Preppers. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to join us on YouTube for our weekly live shows. For more information or to connect with Duff and Dale, visit thesurvivalpreppers.com or thebugoutlocation.com for members-only content and prepping courses. See everyone next time.